So from here, we're going to do a quick introduction of everyone in the panel, and then we're going to go from there. So my name is Kathy Du. I am a SharePoint MVP, and I'm one of the board members of the overall organization of Women in SharePoint. So I'm really happy to be here, and I'm going to let the panel introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Laura Rogers. I am another SharePoint MVP, and I'm a manager of SharePoint Technical Consultants at Rackspace Hosting.
Hi, I'm Naomi Moneypenny. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at ManyWorlds. We specialize in adaptive systems, systems that learn from how people use them. I lead the research and engineering team.
Hi, I'm Lori Gowan. I'm a Microsoft Premier Field Engineer, and I also help co-chair with Kathy with the Women in SharePoint in the National Group.
My name is Jennifer Mason. I'm a SharePoint consultant that really focuses on helping organizations understand how they can use SharePoint, specifically out of the box. So anything you can do without syntax and semicolons and just really making the most of the product.
And I'm Julia White, and I work at Microsoft, and I have the opportunity to lead the Office Product Management team, which is responsible for Office 365, Office Client, SharePoint, and Exchange.
Thank you so much to our fantastic panelists for coming in and giving up some of their time today to participate. I'm going to start out, like I said, with a couple of kind of questions, and then we're going to open it up for Q&A to the audience here. So my first question that I'm going to pose to you guys is, what is the one piece of advice or the piece of advice that you wish that someone had given to you as you started your career in IT?
Should I start since I have the mic? Yeah. Go in reverse order. So I would say early on in my career, I was never a coder, a core developer, but I've always worked in tech my whole career. And I feel like early in my career, I was always apologizing for not being more technical. And I just shouldn't have done that. And I was plenty technical, been very successful in my job. I didn't need to do that early in my career. And at some point, about midway through, someone said, stop apologizing. You're go technical enough. I was like, okay, I'll move on. But it was should have heard that earlier.
Kind of funny, but mine is the same as her. I think the idea is to go ahead and embrace where you're at, because you are so important to the business where you're at, even if you're just having conversations. And you might not be writing the code, but you're gathering the requirements. And just embrace where you're at, and if you're passionate about it, keep growing it and developing it. Because I, like Julie, a lot of times was like, okay, but I'm not writing code and I'm not installing on a server, but I'm also not passionate about that. And so it's okay to embrace what you love and go towards that and find the jobs that work well for that and what you want to do.
I think the biggest piece of advice that I got at some point in my career was don't be afraid. When you walk into a room and all eyes are looking at you, trying to help you, give you information so you can find the answer, don't be afraid to walk in and say, okay, let me think about this. I don't know yet. Let's figure it out.
Okay, I think I have the opposite maybe to Julia and Jennifer. I'm a little too technical, right? And so actually learning some of those business skills became very, very important. The ability to do speaking, the ability to be able to communicate ideas to people who don't understand the fundamentals of technology, that's probably one of the most important skill sets that I've actually tried to achieve over the last few years.
Mine's a little bit unique. I ended up loving coding when we first learned it, like third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, you know, back in the 80s when we first learned BASIC and things like that. And then for some reason, when I went to college, I thought for some reason that I wanted to be a physical therapist and got a degree in something completely unrelated to technology. And I kind of wish someone, my dad or someone, had sat me down and said, no, I can tell that you really love this. Just go ahead and do that, because, you know, it's going to be, you're going to have a good time, you're going to enjoy it. And then I ended up back in technology anyway, but I kind of wish I had actually, you know, gone to college and gotten a computer degree, but, you know, that would have been good.
Yeah, for me, mine is to embrace your background was one of the things that people told me. So coming into technology, I actually have a painting degree and a graphic design degree. I went to art school. And so coming into technology and being a UX developer and writing code, somebody told me just embrace your background and use it to your advantage. And so that was the piece of advice. It doesn't matter what your background is, but embrace it, because those experiences shape who you are and how you interact in the business. So that was kind of the piece of advice that I got. So my other question that I typically establish out with is there a challenge, a particular challenge that you faced, and how did you address that challenge?
I guess I'm first.
You're up.
Oh, does anybody already know what their answer is?
I was going to say, some of us have ready answers.
So this is a fun one for me because I'm kind of in the midst of it. I work on a team where I am the only girl, and I work with the most wonderful guys that I've ever worked with, but sometimes they just don't realize that there's things that I just don't understand the same way they say it, or I don't want them to respond that way. And so one of the biggest challenges I have right now is setting up the boundaries and understanding it's okay to say, ooh, let's not say that, or deflating the situation and helping them understand how to interact with me. And I say, you know, just in kind of full transparency, that's one of the things that, you know, I know it's okay for me to be me and to be in those situations, but figure out how to be in the situation, understand that nothing is getting said to be, you know, hurtful or anything like that, but understanding that it's okay to offer guidance and teach them how, you know, some of these things should be going on. And so I think that's probably one of my currently active situations that I'm working through. And it's not necessarily a bad situation because I work with an incredible team, but it's still a reality of the day-to-day things you have to face.
Yep, my challenge is handy. And I thought it'd be good because I feel like I mentor a lot of women in this area. So when I started my career, I was absolutely terrified of public speaking. Just anything I could do to avoid public speaking, and certainly not demoing. Didn't want to do any of that. And after a few years in my career, I realized that that's going to be pretty core to being successful. And so I was like, there's no way to get around this one. I'm going to have to just dig in and get it done and take the hard shots. And every time I did one, got easier. And then suddenly I actually turned a corner. I'm like, man, I love this. I can do this. It was scary, very, very scary. So I just want those of you who are out there who are terrified about it and think you'll never be good at it, it can be done.
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that I have faced, and thankfully I work for Microsoft and it's very much easier for me to address, is balancing work and family. I'm one of the panelists, I know a couple of you do as well, that also has young children still at home, a family, a house, people that I need to be around as much as I need to work. And so that's probably the biggest challenge that I've faced in my career, and having to figure out how to balance all of that.
I think from my perspective, it's been a lot around resourcing. I have a little bit of the same problem that Jennifer has. So I run a research and engineering team, and I have no other women on my team, right? And that is not by choice, right? It's definitely not by choice, right? It's just the lack of people coming in. There's a lack of applicants. Even when we've had jobs available, we just don't get female applicants. And I realize, you know, some of it's because, you know, we work basically in artificial intelligence and machine learning, and these are very specialized disciplines. But there is absolutely no reason why women don't go into these disciplines. I mean, there's no, you know, it's not a brain reason. There's no actual competency difference. But somehow we don't actually get anybody coming in. So even though I would want to encourage diversity, really a lot in our company, I am unable to do so because I cannot get the resources that I need in order to do that.
My challenge is I am a mother. I have three daughters. And what happens is with daughters, I guess, you know, friends and the media and things like that, they get a lot of dolls and Barbies and things like that as toys. And my challenge is that I want them to sort of think outside of that and think outside of, you know, everyone has an American Girl doll. I want to have 800 American Girl dolls. When I was a child, my parents bought me things like, you know, science kits, chemistry sets, Capsella, those little things you could plug together and build things. And so I mean, maybe I have my logic mind and I like programming those kind of concepts because of the things like that my parents introduced me to. So I've just come to the realization that, you know, it's up to me to kind of, you know, broaden their horizons and say, you know, dolls aren't the only thing because you're a girl that, you know, that you can play with, and kind of introduce them to other toys and let them make their decisions and not have to kind of just funnel them into this little role that they think that they need to be in.
So one of the challenges that I face is that I'm a consultant and I'm one of the road warriors on my team. So for me, that means I travel a lot, sometimes every week. And when I travel, I'm often traveling with male coworkers. And so it's one of those things, and you know, I'm a single girl, and I travel with married male coworkers. And so it's one of those things, finding that balance and sometimes educating people to make them feel more comfortable in that scenario. It's not something necessarily that I'm uncomfortable with, but a lot of times the people that I'm traveling with, their spouses are uncomfortable. And how do I set those like limitations and boundaries while still building that teamwork and camaraderie so that I don't have to go back to the hotel and eat dinner by myself every night, and that that's not an okay thing. And so it's kind of finding that challenge of how to get that proper balance in it and keep it going across, and kind of do a little bit of that education as a road warrior going out and traveling, and losing some of that fear of what is going to be thought about or what's somebody going to say. And so kind of going out and kind of addressing that a little bit is one of the challenges that I find myself facing. Okay, so from here, I want to have you all tell me, I'm going to go kind of a little geeky, and then we're going to open up for questions. What thing about SharePoint 2013, Office Online, all of these things, are you most excited about seeing happen and evolving from this conference?
I think that I love the workflows in SharePoint 2013. I really have a good time digging in, building out business processes, and you know, figuring out custom business solutions, and using that SharePoint Designer workflow tool to be able to, you know, kind of make it do, finagle it to do whatever I want it to do. And as far as the things that have been introduced just in the past couple of days, I really appreciate the new sort of interfaces that they've built around how you're working, especially, you know, someone's in their inbox, just having things show up for them in their inbox and all be connected, and end users not having to remember several places to go. So that's huge for me.
I think the thing that made me really excited yesterday, rather the day before in the keynotes, was this whole concept of working like a network, right? I think that women are really good at working like a network, right? We understand oftentimes, right? So we understand, you know, what competencies people bring. We take the time to understand their expertise, their capabilities, what their needs, what they're looking for, right? And we sort of do that instinctively to try to bring out the best in people. And so thinking about this move in terms of transformational technologies, how information is flowing inside of the organization, we know that a lot of that is about communication, right? And women, again, we're good at doing these things. I think we have these natural behaviors. And so having technology that actually enables and supports that through Office 365 is really amazing.
So to be a little bit different, Laura and I actually used to work together. And when we started with InfoPath. And so I knew it was coming. I'm okay with that. But we did. We built no-code solutions. That's basically what we did, kind of like Jennifer and Laura still do. So seeing some of the new tools that are coming to allow users to be able to do that and to really be able to build those applications, those rich applications, without having to write code. And I'm excited about getting to share that with my customers and let them know, hey, don't be afraid. It's going to be okay, and this is going to be good for you.
Kind of similar with Lori. I've had a few moments of over the past couple of years as I've seen my tool set change drastically, but being assured by Microsoft, no, we're really listening, and it's going to change, and you're going to start to see things. And so I think one of the messages is that we can really take from this conference, and what we've seen is this concept of transforming the way that we work, and none of the answers are really about a technology. It's not like you're going to transform the way you work because of X, Y, and Z in this product. We're going to transform the way we work because of the way that things are coming together and the natural way that we're already working, and that's very exciting. And then to see the future of the form session, I actually walked out of that extremely excited, because I'm like, all right, y'all got this. We don't have it delivered yet, but you got it, and you're letting me know you got it. And so it's kind of exciting to see that when we're moving into that transformation of how we work, it's not about the technology. It's actually about how we work and then pulling this existing tool set together. So that's kind of what excites me the most out of what we've seen so far here this week.
kind of a hard question for me.
Pick a favorite child, Julia.
I know, I love all my children. I asked you the different perspective. The favorite thing for me and what for this week is seeing all of your reaction to what we showed, right? I mean, we've been working on it and it's been under the wraps and, you know, making it work and a lot of nights sweating, like, is it going to show up right? Are we talking about it the right way? Is it going to make sense to people? But seeing the reaction and seeing it make sense, and you guys did a beautiful job of articulating, thank you. It's great. It's so rewarding. It makes it, all those long nights and all those hours, it makes it worth it when people get excited about what you're doing.
I'll tell you, I'm a UX person, so for me, the thought of mobile first, and that being something in all of the mobile connectivity and the way that we're looking forward and looking towards mobile is really exciting to me. So that's one of the things that I've heard reinforced here several times and that excites me. And so I'm really looking forward to how that continues to develop. So does anyone in here have any questions for the panel? If you do, there's two microphones up here and we'd love to have you come ask us some questions.
Just a question, request of you all. I see the website up there. Can you put mini profiles of each of you up there?
So certainly.
We can remember who we saw and what, you know, what context it was.
Yeah, and there's a blog section, and so now after the conference, I'm going to go write a nice blog post on this with pictures and all of that. So I'll make sure that some of that information gets included there, for
okay.
Sure.
Good. And then my question for particularly you with the environment you're in and the dealing with the all-male colleagues versus, I come from the world of a predominantly woman profession. I'm a librarian. This is the first conference I've ever been to where the men stood in line.
Hi.
Isn't it fantastic? I love it when they take the ladies' room and shut it down and make it a men's room.
So,
every time elsewhere, they do it the opposite. Here, we shut the ladies' room down and make it a men's room.
Exactly. And a comment along those lines is what we are seeing is more and more women in technology coming to these technical conferences, and that's why we want to do these things, so that we can encourage you to keep coming, encouraging other women to get involved in technology and in technical roles so that we can do that. It's now getting to be where you might actually see a couple of women in line, but I can remember the first SharePoint conference I went to, all the men were standing in line, and I walked by like, da 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 da. You know? It's like, neener, 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 you know. So but it's great to start seeing that and seeing those changes.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here. I'm an executive and in tech, a bit of tech, and I have a small family. I have two small children. So for those of you who have children too, can you sort of tell me how you deal with it? I find that that's just such a struggle with just home life and social life and children, but needing, you know, feeling that dedication to your work at the same time.
Calendars. No, actually, I was very fortunate in my technical career when my children were really small. I didn't travel. And then in the last few years, I got to where I was in a very much a traveling role. I was a transactional PFE for a long time. And so I was on the road almost every week. I was gone. And that was very difficult. But I had a very supportive husband that was very encouraging about that. And we calendar everything. I mean, practices, sports, everything goes on a calendar so that at all times we know where people are and where we're supposed to be. And it's a challenge, and it's really hard when I go home or when I'm leaving and my kids go, no, you can't leave, and they're hugging me. But then I love that moment of coming home and they're all excited to see me. And usually I make sure I bring them a little something, you know. You have to bribe once in a while. I'll bring you something from there. So, yeah, that's what swag's for, right? but it's difficult. It is a challenge, and, you know, but they're very understanding, and I want them to understand what I do. So I do try to talk to them and let them know what I'm doing as well, and they can see why mommy's on the phone at midnight because somebody's server's down, and I'm trying to help them get it back up so that they can understand why that's happening.
And also, telecommuting helps. So I work at home. My office is in my basement, and so I may have to go to work a little earlier, you know, in 7 instead of 8 in the morning, because I have to go pick people up from dance and things like that at 4 o'clock. But it's really helpful to be there and to be there when they get off the bus and things like that, even though I'm at home working all day. And, you know, the baby's in daycare. You know, I don't sit there and babysit the baby all day. I'm actually working, but it's good to physically be there and be close and be able to take them to their activities they need to go to.
One last comment, I agree completely. The other aspect too, I have two small children, and at any one time, you're never in balance, right? Never, there's no balance. But I know that sometimes I'm working a lot, and sometimes I'm playing a lot and spending time with my kids, and over the long course, it works out. But any 1 month, 1 week, it might feel like, gosh, I'm heavier one way or the other, and you know, just not feel guilty about that. And any one time, you're not gonna be perfectly balanced. But as long as over the long term, you feel like, gosh, I've gotten great kid time in, and I've been able to move my career forward, then it works out.
Yeah. And one thing I would say, and this is kind of an example of even the prep for this conference. So Laura and I have session this afternoon, and then we have a 4-hour post-con tomorrow. And that takes a lot of work to prep for it. And Laura and I would work, and she would lean on me a little bit for sometimes and say, okay, you can do this, and then we can get on Skype at 9 o'clock once my kids have gone to bed. And so as an example of, you know, we both worked together, we both pulled equal roles, but it was very honest, and she was honest with me and was able to rely on me, and it worked well together, and I was happy to help do that. And so it wasn't that she had to try to pick one over the other, but she was just very honest with me, and it's like, okay, we know we have to get this end goal. How can we work together and work it out with both of our schedules to get there? So as somebody who doesn't have kids at home and I don't have those same responsibilities, I still worked, you know, I was able to work through that and understood it completely, and it just kind of changed the way that we worked. But if she wouldn't have been honest with me, I might have gone into it with other assumptions that could have made it uncomfortable. So I think a lot of it's just being honest too, and then relying on others and leaning on them when you can as a team.
So my initial comments were really much in line with what she said. I have an 18-month-old. Many of you met him this week as he came here so that I could have that balance. But the structure I work under in a mostly male environment and in a very kind of restrictive environment, how do I introduce cultural change? So I work with a series of project managers. We're all women, we all have small children, but everyone else is men. So how do we start implementing these things you're talking about and make it acceptable and part of our cultural norms?
That one. That's a good question. I'll tell you, I'm a single person, I don't have any children, but I work predominantly with people that do. And much like Jennifer was just saying in her preparation with Laura for this, for me, it's always, as long as you're honest with me, like, I don't have to take time out, but if you need to take time out to go have a phone call with your children, please just be honest with me. I think that that's the first step, is establishing that conversation and losing a bit of the fear to have that conversation, to say, I would love to start, you know, having a conversation about this and see where it can go. And not being afraid to start that conversation is a great first step into it.
Yes. So one other thing along that lines in the not be afraid is, I was at a women's conference in Redmond. I can't remember when that was, the Global Women's Conference. But one of the things they said was, say yes and then tell them what you need to make it work. You have to be the one to tell them what you need to make it work and how to make it work. You know, if they come in and say, hey, we want to do this X, Y, Z, and you say, okay, yes, let's do that. Here's how we do it. And you just have to be able to be bold enough to say that.
Okay, yeah, similarly, briefly, is I think you have to be unapologetic about it. And I think we tend to apologize for not being able to do this or that. And it's like the guidance I took myself and my team is, set your boundaries and don't apologize. And you know what? People will adapt, because it turns out you're valuable to the organization and they want you. And if you set the boundaries and you're not apologetic and you're not gray and hazy about it, people will work around that. And I think it'll be easier, but it's hard at first to do that and it's scary at first. But then once you do, like, oh, I could do that.
There's, you know, seems to be more and more acceptance lately in organizations when it comes to telecommuting and different hour schedules and things like that. And, you know, there's been research that you could, you know, pull up to prove things. But talk about your manager with, about your hours. Say, you know, can I work from 7 to 4 these days so I can go do this? Or should I, you know, I need to not have to work on Fridays. Can I work just a few extra hours these other days? So just kind of, you know, negotiate and just figure something out with, you know, the people that, you know, your manager, whoever it needs to be, and, you know, assure them that you're doing the work, you're pulling your hours, but you just need to adjust it here and there every now and then.
I just have one little comment on that, just from a how do I actually get that as a culture of change, right, inside of the organization. I think a lot of it is understanding how you can put these disparate needs together. So if it is all women project managers and you understand that you have similar requirements, I would say be advocates inside of the organization and propose something proactively, right? You don't get enough if you just say, hey, you know, I need to make an exception for this day or whatever. Be really proactive in actually coming up with how you want things to work and do it as a group. So that it's recognized as an issue and it can be, you know, part of corporate policy and process, right? Because that's what you want it to be. You don't want to be just an exception, you know, because it's your team and your day. You want it to be a real corporate policy so people, you know, have this across the whole organization and you're fundamentally getting better.
Is this on? One of the things I found working in a predominantly male-dominated technology field is always having to prove myself. 20 years later, still. And maybe it's my perception, maybe it becomes habit, but I always feel like I have to prove myself, which makes me go further than a lot of people do, and I end up proving myself. But yeah, that can get exhausting, I think. Do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, so I've felt some of those same things as well, and then I'm in that industry, I have a technical background, but I don't want to keep the servers on, and I don't want to write the code, I want to actually use the technology. And it's interesting, and what I'd say is if you surround yourself with other people that are doing it, and like out in the environment, the thing about the SharePoint community is that there's a spot for everyone, and they're very accepting of it. Whether you're just pushing a button in a browser or whether you're compiling something in Visual Studio, it's a very accepting environment. And I think if you can, and I know this has been personally in my own life, when I take things that I know I can be successful in and kind of get involved in there and get my voice out there, then when I hit those other ones, I'm taking from what I've learned here. So you almost have to find that safe community spot where you can step in with a local user group or different things like that, where you're getting your value maybe not from, you know, what you're doing in work and what you're trying to do, but you know where you're at with the technology and you're getting it that way, and then it becomes less of an issue there as it balances out. And so I think, you know, anything you can do to get involved in the SharePoint community is just one of those that it's so accepting. I mean, we're a crazy bunch of people that's always going around and doing something. And it's one of those ones where no matter what you're excited about, you can kind of jump in and get your feet wet and kind of get that validation and see what others are doing. And then it's just something that you may never, in an organization, you may never, it might be the culture, it might be something that you have to leave to find that, but you can start to look for it in other places is one piece of advice I'd give.
We've got only a couple of minutes left, and I want to get a couple more questions.
Okay, so I just wanted to say embrace that, because it will move you further in your career.
Yeah, every time someone challenges me, I just say thank you, because you just made me better. So, let's start with you.
I missed the introductions, because the line was really long for lunch, so.
That's okay.
Sorry about that. It's exciting. There's so many people here. I recognize Julia and Laura, I think, from Twitter. So I'm not sure where all of your workplaces are from, but I just wanted to one thing, say I really appreciate, you know, encouraging people to be courageous and, you know, overcome those fears of saying whatever. Sometimes people don't feel that way, and I'm just wondering if anyone can address anything that their workplace has done as a broader initiative that doesn't rely on an individual feeling like they're alone and needing to be courageous. I'm privileged to work at a mostly female company, so, but I, you know, may not work there all my life, so I would like to just hear, you know, if y'all have had any experiences with that, a successful implementation, or a not successful one, and why they were successful or not.
Who has one? I work in mostly male, so I'm usually the one fighting the charge. I will say that I've encountered quite a few challenges in the workplace. Not only am I a female in it, but I'm from the South, right? So I have been in a very male-dominated, we're going to go earn the bacon, you know, kind of environment. And I've been asked a lot of things that just shock me, quite honestly. And so, like what? I once got asked by a manager when I was moving onto his team on a scale from 1 to 10, how likely was I to cry in the office? And my biggest regret to this day is that I didn't burst into fake tears immediately. So, I mean, I encountering little comments like that and little kind of subtle digs for me is just one of those reasons that I do this, that I am one of the people running Women in SharePoint, and I do this because a lot of people run into those situations and don't know how to handle them, right? So for me, it's I address that by doing this group because I haven't been able to. I work mostly for small consulting firms, and so it is a male-dominated group. And while we bring women in and encourage them and try to do the courageousness and all of those factors, I haven't had a large enough, as a consultant, it's predominantly male. And so I haven't had enough to be able to have that corporate culture, whereas a few of these people up here have. So for me, that's how I do it, is that I am involved in the community, and I use that to help back me up and provide that nice comfort zone for it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I have a friend of a friend works at ThoughtWorks, and she was telling me that they have some kind of project where they're trying to actively get more women working there. So
we do that from the Women in SharePoint perspective. We go out. I know I personally mentor college girls that are looking to get into it as they go through their college careers. Right now I have three in my hometown that I'm mentoring and helping to encourage and get them through some of those obstacles that they're facing just in college, much less getting into the job force. So for myself personally, we do that. We follow a lot of the Women in Tech principles, where we encourage people to go out and engage with your local universities and high schools and, you know, give talks and do things like that to bring it up. And then I know a lot of companies are implementing mentorship programs and things like that as well. And so I've advised on a couple of those, but I haven't personally experienced it within my own company.
Yeah, we have one where I work, and it's a very active group. And the interesting thing about it is I've been at the company for 2 years, and I didn't really know too much about it until one executive went to a meeting with another executive and said, oh, Jennifer should be in this. And then I got looped in. And so the group kind of started small, and they're growing. They do things like it's like speed dating, but it's speed mentoring, and they pull in different people. I don't know. But they do different things like that, and they have mentoring, and I've met with them a couple of times, so I'm in the grasp of kind of getting out there and finding out exactly what it is. So I know that my company personally has some, and I don't know what Microsoft has, but I know you guys have some.
We have a lot. I would first start answer question of if there's kind of macro inequities that are these obnoxious over the top stuff, and then there's the micro inequities. And I would encourage you, if you're working at a place where there's really macro inequalities, get out. Like, don't put up with that. Vote with your feet. Very talented, employable women. You shouldn't deal with that. And that's how change drives. So I would say, Microsoft, we have lots of things we do to address, both educate about micro inequities, because I don't think we have macro ones, thankfully. But just to raise awareness of men and women, because everyone has to understand it, and then drive behavior changes around it. So I think, and we have mentor rings, because mentoring is, from the research around it, has proven to be one of the most important aspects of bringing up women, is having great mentorships, and both not mentors, but also sponsors, and they're different. One is the person you go to and ask hey, I'm really struggling with this, what do you think? And the other one is the person who makes sure when people are talking about talent, your name's on the list. And you need to be explicit about who are your mentors and who are your sponsors. And you should know them. And they should know that they're that for you. You can't make it, you have to make it very explicit so they know the role they're serving for you. So, but lots of different programs. We could talk for hours about it, but there's a lot of good things.
And there's a couple of good articles that we have in the blog section, the one blog post. I hit publish on this site on Sunday. So there's a blog post that I put in there that has a couple of really great articles about some of the things that we're talking about, leaning in, and some of that for women is in a couple of those articles in there.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm a program manager for my division, and I'm the only female in that division. And I work with a diverse group of guys from baby boomers to Generation X to millennials, and there are days it's like herding cats. What's your advice?
Herd them? No.
Yeah, I don't know. Find the right mix of catnip and milk that's going to encourage them to go in the right direction. That's Naomi's underhand a little comment up here. Maybe get a dog. That's a good one.
So managing a group of men, and I don't actually manage anyone, but when I come in and I've been called in for a crit sit or for something, 9 times out of 10, I'm walking in as the IT person, and they're not expecting me. They're expecting some guy to walk in, but it's usually 8 men around a table and then me. And so learning how to communicate with them is definitely a challenge. And I would say that you have to learn how to adjust the words that you use, because we have to make sure that they understand what we are saying. Because I can say something to Jennifer, and she will say, okay, well, that's kind of important to her. And she'll know that from the words that I say. But if I use those exact same words and I talk to a man, he's going to think, she didn't care about that. So you have to adjust your language, adjust the way you present yourself to them, and make sure that you let them know that you are there for a reason and they need to listen to you.
I do project management as one of my roles as well. And so for me, I typically am going in and managing a team of developers or IT pros and all of that. And for me, it's all about establishing the lexicon up front. And so I make sure that we all have the same understanding of the terms. Because what I've found a lot of times is that my definition and what my expectations are around what I'm asking them of and what theirs are different. And so like Lori said, it's adjusting the way I communicate with them and understanding that there is a difference. And so for me, that's one great way to kind of address some of that. How do I go in and herd those cats?
Just one little comment to build on that. So I run a team of developers and engineers, and some of them are very special, shall we just say. They have their own little prima donna personalities in there, as all good engineers do. And so one of the things I found with them is building on this communication style. I found that generally, I hate to be broad-based here and say, men generally process things as single threads, right? So actually, putting that out in linear steps and making it very clear the connections between one thing and another. Oftentimes as women, just in regular conversation, we multi-thread, right? And we expect people to be able to jump around and understand where we're going and how something connects to something else. Men do not do that, especially technical men, right? They do not do that. And I'm not trying to be bad on them. It's just a different way of processing the information. So we want things to be sequential. We want the connections between each step to be clear. And the onus is on us to understand that and present that in a different way.
So as we move into the next one, they have a very short turnaround in this room to get our food cleared out for the next session. So I'm going to say that this is our last question that we're going to go through. But if you have questions, please feel free. You will see all of us around the conference. I know that most of us will be at the Ask the Experts tonight, all of that. Feel free to walk up to us at any time and ask those questions. We would love to have those conversations with you. And so I'm going to ask the last question, and then we're going to kind of adjourn and let them change out the room and us get to the next session.
Cool. Thank you. So kind of more slightly gender neutral question. I think regardless of who you are or what your role is, I've certainly found it beneficial to stay on the cutting edge of technology and where things are going. And also in terms of thinking about micro problems and addressing things not on that macro scale, but that micro scale, really educating ourselves about psychology and how people think. So how do you stay on top of changing world, most recent book you've read, favorite Twitter follower? How do you stay on top of things? Because that makes you relevant. Whether you're a man or a woman, it makes you relevant, puts you in the room, regardless of who else is there.
So I actually do a couple of things to keep myself on the tech edge, as well as a global scale. I actually have, a lot of us are all friends, and I have a lot of friends that are very active technical bloggers, and I tech edit their blogs for them. They send them to me, I read them, I review them, I do all of their, you know, proofreading, I check, make sure everything works, and then send it back to them, tell them what's working, what's not working. And that keeps me focused on what I'm doing. That's how I get, okay, now this is kind of cool, and then I can go research that, because they're going to be trying to put out the latest and greatest stuff. So I do that on a personal level so that I can stay on top of the tech side. On the global scale, I try to read at least one book a month that is not fiction. One of the most recent ones that I read is Addressing Poverty. And it's actually more about how to address poverty in education. And I can't remember the name of it right now. But it was a really interesting book to read, and talked about how we have language registers, things like that, so that I could begin to see that. I work in my community. I live in an area that is one of the poorest areas in my entire county and region. And I'm very fortunate, but I know that a lot of people around there, I've realized they're living in poverty. There's kids that I see that don't necessarily get three meals a day, and I want to know how this is affecting their lives and how I can help better that.
So just quickly, I usually have a plan for any situation that I go into. So SharePoint conference, I have a list of about 4 or 5 people that it was my goal to get in front of them and get some face-to-face time with them, because I know it's kind of like that iron sharpeneth iron, and I want to learn from them and I want to do different things. It's also, when I go after different things, I look for somebody who's kind of done the path before me. I learn from what they're doing, different things along those ways. I recently, within the last couple of years, started technical writing. So I write for CMS Wire and different things like that. And at one of my first events, I actually sat down with Mary Jo Fally, and I follow her on Twitter and stuff like that, but I ask her, and got questions for her and got insight from somebody who's a couple of steps ahead of me. It's kind of one of the pieces of advice that I got when I first started working is and this was about dress code, but you dress for the job you want, not the one you have. You work the schedule for the job you want, not the one you have. You basically do the job you want before you're there. And I kind of do that same thing in Twitter. So I'll find those people of where I want to go and follow them, mimic them, try to get FaceTime with them and ask them questions and different things like that around those lines. And then just make a plan when I go into places of how can I further that when I'm going after it and kind of work it that way.
I keep a OneNote document that has links to blog posts and books and things like that. And I'm, as a traveler, I'm always on a plane. And so I'm constantly downloading things to the Kindle and all of that and reading. And so I try to, when I'm on the plane, if I'm on a trip, take one book that's something about a subject. For me, it's user experience is my primary thing. And so I kind of, there's so much that's evolving in that. There's so many books, so many trends. How do you keep on top of it? I worked in advertising, so I keep track with marketing trends and what's going on in the design world. So for me, it's all about keeping that list and keeping it relevant. So I keep it in OneNote so I can access it on any of my devices. And then I can easily follow that link out to the blog and catch up on it as I can. Sitting at lunch, sitting at dinner, on a plane, in the airport, wherever I am, I can catch up and read something. And I try to make that my goal. Like, even if I'm going on vacation, I'm going to set myself a goal of reading at least one blog post or one book, however it is, one article, before I kind of let my brain go on vacation mode at each time I travel. So for me, you know, each plane trip, you know, I try to do that. So on the way out here, I read a book. On the way home, I'll try to read another one.
I have a list of RSS feeds that I read all the time. I use Feedly, and I am just constantly flipping back to that just during the day, you know, between emails and projects and things like that, and then I find something interesting, tweet it out. And also, I'm a manager, but I still make sure and keep up to date with the technology with SharePoint. I don't just manage my team, I sort of mentor them. So I help figure out technical issues with them and help figure out the best way to do business solution with them and test things. And then that's how I get ideas. And that's how I get ideas for my blog, just little cool things that I figured out how to do and that we figured out together. I think you also, the girl who asked the question, I think you also mentioned interpersonal communication. That made me think of something cool we do at Rackspace, which is something called, it's a personality test called the Strengths Finder. And every single employee at Rackspace takes the Strengths Finder test, and you have your top five strengths, and they have it on our badges at work, and they have it on every cubicle, and they teach everyone about all the different strengths, and it helps you understand how to communicate with the person that you're talking to if you can understand kind of where they're coming from and what their strengths are. So that's a really interesting, you know, there's a book to read about it, and there's a really interesting way of kind of learning how to communicate with other individuals.
I want to go ahead and wrap us up and thank you all for coming today. We really appreciate it. We're so excited to see this becoming a staple here at the SharePoint Conference. So thank you so much for coming. Thank you to the panelists for participating. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.